Gary Daniels, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you, Scott. Very well. Can't complain.
Oh, great to see you. Thanks for coming on my show. Gary, I've been watching you for many, many years. Growing up in the 90s, watching martial arts movies.
You're making me sound old.
Well, you know, but this is it. I'm feeling old myself these days. But no, many, many, many action films. Many, many action films throughout the years. I was going through the footage that we're going to be talking about, and there was so much and so much good stuff to choose from.
You're flattering me. If I'm going red, that's you know, it's the reflection from the light somewhere.
And of course, a fellow Brit, trailblazing the way for somebody like me.
Rule Britannia.
Yeah. Still waiting for you to be Captain Britain, mate. Not Captain America. Captain Britain.
You know, I was asked many years ago, like before all the Marvel Universe came out, you know, before it started happening, was somebody asked me, because I was a huge fan of comic books growing up. That was my life as a kid, you know. I'd do my paper round, and every Saturday my money all went to Marvel comic books. And somebody asked me, what character would you like to play? And I said, well, the obvious I would say would be Captain Britain, because I'm from England. But my favorite character was Captain America in the comic books, actually. He was a fighter who he didn't really have superpowers other than that serum that made him super, but he just used his body. He was like, he was a 21st century warrior. He used his body, had terrific control over his abilities, every part of his body. And that's what I admired.
What I ask everyone on this show is if you could tell us, like briefly, because, you know, I know it's going to be a lot. Normally it's with my guests, but briefly tell us about your martial arts background and then how you got into the film business. So please.
You mean the same stuff that I've said in 1,000 interviews in the hundreds of magazines?
But now we're going to have the video of it.
You know, when I started martial arts when I was 8 years old. Leading up to that time, I was an athlete. I'd been playing football since I was 5. And when I was 8 years old, Enter the Dragon came out. Right. My dad was an athlete too. And I saw a preview. I think I was watching like some airplane, some comedy movie. And next week's preview was Enter the Dragon. And I was like, wow, I was blown away by that trailer. It was like, there's a real life superhero. I want to be like that guy.
Yeah.
And just so happened the next week I was in school in class, 8 years old, you know, we used to do art in class and we'd put newspapers on the desk and we'd do art. And I saw this ad for Hayes Kung Fu Club. So I grabbed my dad and I said, we got to go down this Kung Fu Club. So that was it. The next week I started with this. I was so nervous. I had to put my gi on, and I was in the change room. I didn't know how to put my gi on. I was so nervous, right, as a kid. So my dad came back to help me, and he said, do you want me to take this class with you? And I'm like, yeah, would you do it with me? So that was it. My dad and I both got hooked on martial arts on that same day. My dad never quit.
And, he'd never touched martial arts before that day?
Never. No. He'd been in the military. You know, they had national service when he was a young man, and he'd been in Malaya, which is now Malaysia. But no, he'd never done it before that day. But when Enter the Dragon came out, my dad tried to take me to see it. You know, it was X-rated in England. You have to be 18 to see it, right? So we went to the classic movie theater, and I couldn't get in. They wouldn't let me in because I was a kid. So I went home. My dad watched the movie, and I remember him coming home like 11 o'clock that night, 12 o'clock that night, coming in my bedroom and waking me up like, just, Dad, you got to see this movie. You got to see the way this guy, blah, blah, blah. You know, like effect, like Bruce Lee had amongst people. Yeah. So the next week he took me to a cinema in London, right in the center of London, some big, huge cinema with a balcony levels. And it was beautiful. And this time he snuck me in the toilet. He put me in the toilet, went and bought the tickets, come and got me.
Yeah.
And got in to see Enter the Dragon. And it was a double bill.
Just close guys. Your eyes when the boobs come out. You'll be fine.
No, my dad had no problems with that. He would probably tell me to open my eyes. He's dead now, my dad. God bless him. But that was it. Enter the Dragon was the first Bruce Lee movie. And I can still remember that opening scene in the Shaolin Temple, the drums, the music.
It's amazing. Still to this day, it's incredible. Yeah.
So anyway, back to my martial arts.
Bruce Lee, a huge inspiration as for so many of us. I mean, he's just the man, isn't he?
Yeah. I would say 90% of my martial arts life has been based on the, you know, I went on to collect everything I could, like most people have about Bruce Lee, read everything you could about Bruce Lee. And yeah, he was a huge inspiration. And even though I never studied JKD, to me, JKD is a philosophy. It was Bruce Lee's philosophy of martial arts. which he had attained by reading a lot of Buddhism and a lot of Taoism, a lot of the words of Lao Tzu, which I now know, I didn't know at that time. But I implemented Bruce Lee's philosophies and teachings using no way as way, no limitations as limitations, simplicity is simply to simplify, all this kind of stuff, economy of movement, economy of energy, through all my training. That was my core, that was my root teaching. And whether I was doing the Mongolian Kung Fu, the Taekwondo, the kickboxing, the Muay Thai, my Shaolin, Wong Kar-kin, that has been the thread, the root of my training all the way through, the spiritual, the mental side of the training all the way through. My Sifu, who I've had for 27 years, Sifu Winston Omega, he taught me Shaolin Wong Kar-kin. And he's a Malaysian Chinese gentleman. He's like a bridge to the past. He's this older Chinese guy, and he's the most incredible, incredible martial artist I've ever met in my life. He grew up in the temple. So throughout all of our training, he was always infusing Buddhism into me through the training and the importance of the internal training. If you don't go within, you will go without. Whatever is manifested on the outside starts on the inside. But I was more interested in the punching, the kicking, the blocking, the activity, the fighting. So I lacked a little bit in my meditation.
Bruce Lee said the same thing about himself.
But it's like in the last few years, as I've grown older, as we all do, we evolve spiritually, physically, mentally. The last few years, I've delved a lot more into that arena, reading more and focusing on the Buddhism. And I never realized it would create such a transformation in me. And I never realized what meditation could do for you. It's absolutely wonderful. And studying the Tao and trying to connect with the Tao and live in harmony with the Tao, it's so much more than punching and blocking and kicking and fighting. It opens up a whole new universe, a whole new world. Opens up your mind, and it's absolutely fascinating. But over the last few years of studying these things, I've found out where Bruce Lee got all of his, a lot of the stuff we hear Bruce Lee talking about, you know, his most famous comments, be like water.
Yeah.
That came from Taoism.
Right.
Water is the nearest thing to the Tao, but water is a physical existence. The Tao is an insubstantial, non-physical existence. So because water is the physical existence, the physical manifestation of the Tao, or humans should try to act like water. And this is where Bruce Lee got it from. Even his comment in Enter the Dragon, where he says, don't concentrate on the finger or you miss all the heavenly glory.
Mm.
Buddha said that. So now I see where Bruce Lee got all of his stuff. So it's like Bruce Lee was my hero, my idol. I'm going to say the word hero, it sounds childish, but my inspiration, my idol for many years. But now it's like I've gone... You go beyond the teacher and see where the teacher learned from. Yeah. And this is what I think every martial artist should be trying to do.
How often do you meditate then?
I try to do 3 times a day. I usually wake up at sunup around 3-4 in the morning. And that's one of my favorite times.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful semi-conscious state that you can arrive at. Then, I like to do a first thing. When I wake up, I go back to sleep. And when I wake up again, I like to read. And then I do my qigong. You do your breathing exercises. And once you do your breathing exercises and you've got all your chakras open and your energy is flowing, then it's another good time to meditate. And then I like to meditate. I generally train 5-6 days a week, 3 hours a day. And then after my training, when the body is completely, you're absolutely knackered, you're completely depleted, then it's another good time to meditate because your mind is, it's about silencing the mind. Completely emptying your mind of all conscious thought. And you can often do that when you're physically drained.
I mean, I don't know a lot about what you're training in, Chinese Kung Fu, but I know that you would hit like bags full of stones or rocks or something like this to really toughen up the bone. Will get this. Right. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, one of the basics, my Sifu taught me the basics of Chinese Kung Fu is bone conditioning.
Yeah.
So the shins, the forearms, the back of the hands, the knuckles, the side of the hand, the palm of the hand. I'm sure you've seen Iron Hand training. There's been videos and many Shaolin Kung Fu movies have showed you.
Yeah.
My Sifu taught me this is the basis of Chinese Kung Fu. But nobody wants to learn it nowadays. Everyone wants to learn the flash.
Pain, isn't it? I imagine.
At first, it is. When I started training with my Sifu, I'd already been in the martial arts for probably 17, 18, 19 years. I'd already competed. I'd already had black belts in Taekwondo, 3 schools in London, all that. I'd done all that. Yeah. And was still enjoying it. I was training at the Jet Center at the time, actually, with Benny and Peter Cunningham and all those guys. And then I met my Sifu. And for the very first year with my Sifu, he wouldn't teach me anything. We would get together every day and we would just talk about Chinese history, Chinese culture, Chinese philosophy, martial practice. Every now and again, he would like look at something I did and he would adjust my body, my footwork, my stance, whatever. The second year, all it was conditioning, the hands, the bones in my forearm, my shins.
And how would you do that conditioning? What sort of stuff would you do?
Okay, it started out with a bag of sand and you're hitting it constantly. My Sifu would burn incense in his garage and I couldn't stop hitting until the incense had burnt out. And you know, there's different lengths of incense.
Oh, you see a long one, you're like, shit.
You know what? I got so familiar with the smell of it because he would always use this sandalwood one. And it's like, whenever my mind goes to training, it's really weird, but it's a psychological.
I don't like the incense. Gary's here. It'll set him off.
But it started with the sand and it ended, and then it would go to like beans, like these lentils and different kind of beans. And then it's steel ball bearings, small steel ball bearings packed in. I have a bag out the back here. It weighs 250 pounds. It's about this big. About the size, bigger than a head, right? But it weighs 250 pounds and it's solid, packed, because you tighten it so hard. Now, most of the bags you hit at the gym weigh 60, 70 pounds. But how many times do you think you're ever going to get in a fight with somebody that weighs 60, 70 pounds?
Well, so hopefully never.
When you hit those bags, it's good for cardio, right? About working your technique, cardio. I still do it. When you hit these kind of bags, you learn to generate power, your internal power. When you can move a 250-pound bag, you imagine what you can do to the human head that weighs maybe 10 pounds, 10, 15 pounds. But also I use it for, like with the mukjong, my mukjong and my iron bag. Also, obviously, the bones, because all your blocking is done with the forearms, right? So once again, go back to the basics being conditioning of the bones. You have somebody that doesn't never learn to fight. He gets in a fight. Some big guy swings at him. And all he does is go, and you hit those forearms.
Yeah.
I've seen people, I've seen reactions on people, how the shock in their face that they don't realize how much a bone can hurt when you hit them in the right place or hit them on their muscles, you know. It's like when we used to train at the Jet Center, the kickboxers, we used to come in the mornings, right? Kickboxers, Richard Norton, Peter Cunningham, Stan the Man, Longanidas Benny. They were fantastic days. We were training in the morning, all the kickboxing. Then in the afternoon, all the boxers, all the pro boxers would come in. So some of us would stay behind because we just wanted to work our boxing, right? Just to forget the legs and just work with the boxers on the hands. And sometimes the boxers, they knew. They were great guys. We all got on well. But they knew that they could beat us easily with just the hands because they were good. That's all they did. And their bodies were so conditioned from the waist up. So then they would say, look, I don't mind if you kickbox. They'd say, look, go ahead. You can use your legs. I don't mind because they're very confident now. And then as soon as you drop a shin kick on their thigh, it's almost like their body, it's almost like turning a light switch off. They're like this, they're all confident, but you shin kick them on the thigh and you go.
I can't imagine many of them said, go and do your kickboxing because they must have known that was going to happen.
Like, I look really young. I've never looked evil and hard. I've never been a tough guy. I've never been that kind of guy on the outside. So they didn't mind. But it was just fun times.
So you're training about 3 hours every day?
Yes. I try to do 3 hours. I try to do it 3 days on, 1 day off, 3 days on, 1 day off, 3 days on, 1 day off. I'm a big believer in listening to my body, though. If you're sick or overtired or your body feels overtired, listen to it. Rest. Yeah. But that's the goal each week is 6 days a week. If I do five, okay. Rarely would I go below five, but it happens. If, and of course, if you're working, it's different. But yes, I try to do 3 hours a day, and that's without, and then the meditation is different.
What sort of training are you doing? Because I want to know, because for me and everyone else, but you're in phenomenal.
Why are you asking me? Look at you.
No, because honestly, you have been for your whole career and still to this day in phenomenal shape. And you know, I'm sure diet's a large part of it, but like, what sort of training are you doing for 3 hours? Well, I can be a bit lazy. You're obviously doing a lot of flexibility training because you're extremely flexible.
I do two body parts a day with strength training.
Right.
I don't train heavy. I'm not training to be big and muscular. My philosophy is to be firm, to be flexible, to be fluid, and to be functional. This is what's in my head. That's how I see myself, you know, not to be big and tight and can't move.
Biggest you ever were, would you say, was Fist of the North Star?
Definitely. You know, when I was offered Fist of the North Star, you look at the comic books, you look at the anime, and you go, the size of this guy.
The gig is to be massive, isn't it?
Well, you feel a sense of loyalty to the fans that have made that comic book and the anime so successful. Yeah. So yeah, I did. I walk around, my average weight, I fluctuate between 183 and 185 now. When I used to compete at 164, but that was 20 or 30 years ago. But now it's like I say, I fluctuate between 183 and 185. When I did Fist of the North Star, I got up to almost 195.
Getting into the movies, something that you thought about as a kid? Did you ever, in your wildest dreams, think, oh, that's something I'd like to do?
The day I saw Bruce Lee when I was 8 years old, I knew exactly what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
There you go.
I wanted to learn to fight like this guy, and I wanted to work in the film industry.
Brilliant, yeah.
I knew from that day. So, yeah, I went on my martial path, and then I was competing in England. And I knew this isn't what I wanted to be doing. This was not the highest version of myself that I had imagined for myself. I enjoyed it, but I knew there was something deep inside me I wanted to do film. So I spoke to my fight promoter, this guy called George Fettis. I was like 17, 18 years old. And I said, look, I want to go to America. I want to compete over there, because there was rumors at that time that the fighters were making hundreds of thousands of dollars in America. And in England, we were making nothing. It was such a new sport. We'd be traveling from one end of England to the other to train, which you can do in England because it's a small country, right? You take the train, you drive. But he said to me, look, why do you want to go? I said, well, you know, my ultimate goal is to work in the film industry. But to make my way, hopefully I can make money kickboxing when I go over there. So he said, look, how much money do you have? I said, I had less than 300 pounds at that time, you know? And he said, well, I wouldn't go to California if I was you. It's like it's a tougher town. It's more expensive. The people are a bit harder, but because he would take fighters all over, right, to Florida, to California. So he said, if I was you, I recommend you go to Florida. And I said, okay. So I got a standby ticket. I was gone.
How old were you? Sorry.
19. I think 19.
Yeah.
And I had no money. I had no idea what I was doing, but I just, you know, it's a belief. When you have that total belief in yourself that nothing can fail, you can't fail. But it was in Florida that I actually got into acting classes. I started working with Kathy Loughlin, this really cool acting coach. And she taught me a lot, actually. She taught me a lot. A lot of auditioning techniques. And it was a whole new world for me going into acting classes. Because, you know, as a fighter, you're taught to hide your emotions. You cannot show if you're hurt. You cannot show if you're tired. You don't. You're a cold face, right?
Yeah. Well, not just that. You're taught. As a boy, as a man, you're taught that, and on top of that, going into fighting, you know, you have to reinforce that. So,
but acting is the opposite, right? You have to wear your emotions on your sleeve. It's no good. This is what my coach would tell me. We do these scene studies, and I would do scenes, and she'd go, "Gary, I know you're feeling it, but we need to see it." I know you're feeling it, but the audience needs to see it, you know. So, God, I had to work on this. I really had
thrilling,
to work
isn't on it, this. Gary? It's thrilling, the pursuit of acting, the pursuit of the truth. It's like becoming a martial artist. You know, as a martial artist, you're trying to improve your skills, you're trying to reach your black belt, you're trying to gain as much knowledge as possible. It's exactly the same thing, isn't it? In a different direction, obviously, but it's thrilling because it seems so far away at first. Same as martial arts, you know, I can't even throw a punch properly, can't even throw a kick. And then, you know, just and the pull to just try and get there. It's amazing, isn't it?
It goes back to, you know, it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning about all knowledge ultimately leads to self-knowledge. If you don't go within, you will go without. Acting is about going within. Yeah. Acting and martial arts are very similar. In acting and martial arts, it's about being in the moment. You have to be totally in the moment. When you're acting, you can't telegraph how you're going to act. I can't act like I know what the other person's going to do before I do it. There's a saying in acting, you cannot know more than your character.
Yeah.
You cannot know more than your character. Because even though you've read the script and you know what's going on, your character has to be so in the moment so that when somebody says something to you, you have to react to it naturally. It's the same with fighting. When you're fighting, when you're in the ring or in a street fight or wherever, you cannot telegraph what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You have to be empty. You have to be in the moment, totally empty. You have to reach this state of no-mindedness where you have no thought. Once you're empty, you can react to everything naturally. Everything comes from emptiness. Everything comes from nothingness. This is the basis of Taoism, Wu Wei.
And relaxation as well, right? To be relaxed as an actor, to be relaxed as a fighter.
Which comes from experience. So anyway, there was this time when I was doing in Florida, doing these classes, and then I got this Filipino guy. Now, a Filipino friend of mine went to Philippines, and I asked them to take my videotape of me doing some training. And like, if you see, know any movie companies or hear of any movie people, can you show it to them? And it just so it turns out, they did show my videotape to somebody. And so I got invited to the Philippines. And I packed my bags, borrowed some money for a ticket. I didn't have enough money for a ticket. And I put it on a credit card. I overloaded my limit. And I went to the Philippines. And I was there. And I met this guy. I wish I could remember his name because I'd like to hunt him down. But anyway, just joking. I met this guy. And it turns out, at first, we were getting along really well. And he was introducing me to some movie companies. But then it turns out that he thought that I was like some rich American that was going to invest in his movies. Oh. So he could direct movies, right? Typical story. I mean, we all have these stories in this industry. You might not, but most of us have these stories in this industry. And so anyway, this talent scout took me to meet this guy called Wilson Cheng. They owned a company called Solar Films. It's a Chinese family, a very wealthy Chinese family. Yeah. And he was looking to get into making international action films. So he took me to the roof of his building. I went to his office downtown in Ong Pin in Manila. And he took me to the roof of his building and asked me to do a demonstration. So I did. Give him a demonstration. So that afternoon, he signed me up. He gave me a 2-year deal, a 6-picture contract with give me in my own apartment with 2 maids. Wow. I was like, I've made it. Yeah. Jack the Land, man. Yeah. Living large.
Is this one of those movies that you did in the...
That was Final Reprisal. My first ever feature.
That's one you did, or...
That's the Final Reprisal, yeah. That's one I did for Wilson in the Philippines.
Yeah. So you can see the beginnings, but the skills are sharp.
No, when I look at it, I cringe, mate. I cringe. I cringe. My acting, my lack of flow in the technique, I cringe, mate. Look how stiff I'm.
It's a learning process. It's a learning process. Because people don't know about screen fighting until you've done it. Like, it's completely different to fighting. Isn't it? So when did you get back over to the States then?
I did 2 of the films on my contract. The second one was a disaster. And then they asked me to do porn films.
So, okay. Well, what did you say?
What they call bold movies over there. I said, no, I'm not going to. I said, that's not what I'm here for. And they said, and he said to me, you know what? If you don't drop your pants, you'll never make it in Hollywood. And so when I was back in Florida, I flew out to LA to meet this guy, Hilly Elkins. He managed Steve McQueen. He was managing Lou Gossett Jr. and James Coburn. He said, he likes English people. He's married to an English woman, blah, blah, blah. So he set up a meeting for me with this guy, Hilly Elkins, in Beverly Hills. And I went to meet Hilly, and Hilly said, look, I'll take you on right now. He said, yeah, he said, you're a nice guy, blah, blah, blah. So I packed up everything in Florida and we moved with my kid. Moved to LA and he was my first manager. So that's
what year was this, do you reckon?
Early 90s, I would say. Early 90s. Yeah, and he was the one who sent me on my first auditions. I got Nights when I was with him, I got my first PM film when I was with him, and that kind of kicked things off for me.
Yeah,
so
PM Entertainment. Yeah, they used to crank out loads of stuff, didn't they?
This is where Spiro Rosatis got his start. Spiro did three of my films I had on the contract. Like, he does all the Avengers films. He does every big A. He's the highest paid action director in the industry. And he started with PM because Joseph Mary gave him a break. And I did three films, Rage, Riot, and Recoil, these heavy, heavy action films. And Spiro did all the action design on them. That's what made him so successful.
Well, I think the first film I can remember seeing you in was Knights. You're hard to miss, you know, because at the time you had the long blonde hair, you know, and you got those crazy high kicks. And you've got the hair back now as well. Good to see. Good to see. Classic Gary Daniels.
Pandemic hair. Lockdown hair.
Talk me through a bit of this then. This is Firepower.
And this is like the second film I did with PM. Like, Chad McQueen was the star and I was like his sidekick. But when they sold the film, they put me first on the poster and all sorts of stuff. The director had a hard time with Chad. He was a bit of a Hollywood brat.
Yeah, yeah. But no, impressive. Obviously, just impressive flexibility.
Steven did my choreography on this, actually. Art Camacho was the original choreographer, but I brought in my Sifu to do all my stuff.
Good old 90s stuff.
Yeah, in the days when I could jump.
But this is the Ultimate Warrior.
He was great. What a character.
How was it working with the wrestler?
I've worked with a few of them. The producers love to work with these big guys because they look so impressive and they have a following. But for martial arts guys, it's kind of difficult to work with them because whole different tempo, whole different timing, and they're kind of limited in their techniques. And sometimes, like, we want to do a nice combination, but. And while you're on your third technique, they're still reacting to the first. So sometimes it was difficult, you know.
For something like Firepower, can I just ask, would you do like, we're doing a fight. Would you do the fight from beginning to end? Or would you do like, okay, let's do this section and then this section?
No, Mark, that's it. That's another thing. I'm glad you brought that up. We would have to do a master shot for all the fights. That's how the editor knew from that master the sequence of events, right, for the fight.
Yeah.
That's how and then he would piece together, oh, okay, we got a good insert here. Oh, this is a wide shot, works here, and over the shoulder here, blah, blah, blah. That's how he would piece it together using that one master. But for actors, when you, I don't know if you experienced it, but when you're doing these masters, you get tired, man.
You get tired, yeah. And
it can get sloppy.
You're a fit guy as well, and if you're getting tired, we're all in trouble. But yeah, you get sloppy, and that's when the accidents happen.
That's when the accidents. This is what I would tell them all the time.
How did the process of working with Jackie Chan and a Hong Kong movie differ from, you know, working in America?
Night and day at that time. Actually, night and day. I was very green at that time, you know. That was right at the beginning of my career. This was 1992. Getting a call to go work with Jackie Chan, the fanboy in me came out, you know. I was like, are you kidding me? You know, I grew up watching, you said you grew up watching some of my films. I watched Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan with the people that I grew up watching. All the Hong Kong guys, Sammo, Yung Biu, Huang Jiang Li. I love these guys, you know, Tan Tao Liang. These are my guys. So getting that call to go out there and work on that was just, I was fanboying it. And it was hard to just be professional at that time, at the beginning. But what a unique experience. There's no schedule. You just keep shooting until you've got what you want, basically. And that was weird. But I was never, on that film, there's no script for it. Because in Hong Kong, when Jackie Chan's putting out a film, if there's a script, somebody will steal it and it will get copied. And their version will be out before Jackie's version.
Never a script, Gary, in Hong Kong. I've never seen a script.
And that's probably for that.
Four of them.
But, so that was interesting. So how do you develop a character? How do you develop your background and develop a character? Basically, I just played a stereotypical bad guy as I've seen in any white
guy. That's what they wanted, I can guarantee you.
Even my name in the film was Muscles. You know what I'm saying? It's so very deep. But no, it was interesting because back in the States when we were shooting those films on that limited budget, often when we would shoot a fight scene, let's take Firepower, some of those films, they would set up four or five cameras around the stage, the fight area, all with different lenses on, right? you shoot the fight, some in slow-mo, some in 24, some at 22 frames per second, all with different lens sizes. And then when they get in the editing room, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. Yeah. They had no idea how this fight should look when they're shooting it. And then they look at all this footage and like, oh, they've got to piece together a fight out of it. So much footage is wasted.
Yeah.
And this is what was great for me. When I went to do City Hunter, it was like going to film school for me. I would be going to the set, probably at the annoyance to everybody, even when I wasn't working, to learn, to watch and learn how they shoot the action and how they shoot the fights. And this is when I learned about mini masters. And this is where I learned about in-camera editing. They know, like when Jackie, like my opening scene in that film, Jackie choreographed it, got behind the camera and shot it and everything, right? So they know in their mind exactly what they want the fight to look like. So they shoot you in these little mini masters. Okay, this little sequence is best from this angle. Then the next sequence, we move the camera to this angle. They put pretty much the whole shot was shot, the whole fight was shot on a 35, right? A 35 lens, which is pretty wide, and they go to a lower angle. And this is, they already have it edited in their head before they shoot, so nothing's wasted. And they understand there's only really one angle that's best for this sequence, one angle that's best for that sequence, one angle that's best for this technique, blah, blah, blah. So it's all edited in their head before they even start shooting. And this is what I learned.
Were you able to take what you learned back and implement it into some of your future films, or was it always a struggle? Because I can imagine, because I come across it myself, you know, you don't want to be butting heads with directors and all the time, but probably they're used to doing it a certain way, and now you know the way that it's supposed to be done. Yes, it takes longer, but now you've got the info,
but you don't get the power. In Hong Kong, they have a Mo Suk Jido, an action director. He does the choreography, he directs the shooting, and he goes in and edits it, right? So he gets his vision.
Yeah.
I've never been allowed that. They asked me to choreograph the fights. I'll choreograph it, and I know how I want to shoot it. So I get my camera to get my shots, right? But then the director will set up another camera somewhere else for this shot. And I said, please don't do that. Mm. I don't want the editor to have a choice.
Exactly, yes. Don't give them the choice. It's crazy. Yeah.
Why give them a choice when this is the best angle? But can you tell the American director? Can you tell directors here that?
Exactly. No.
You can't. And do I ever...
Because you don't want to be the asshole on the beginning of every movie, do you? You want to get on with these people.
Yeah, that's the fine line. That is such a fine line. And I've had friends here that directors tell me, Gary, you have to be more demanding to get what you want. But you don't want that conflict on the set, right? I mean, if you're a big name, huge star, yes, you can do that. But I'm not at that position. So... yes, you don't want that conflict. And I know you upset a director. You're never going to work on another one of his films.
I do. I am in a position now where I make the demand. I'm having control of the fights. Otherwise, I'm not doing it. Unless it's a movie where I'm not the star and I, you know, that's not my call to make.
My close friends or my family are so sick and tired of hearing me say, I cannot believe how they ruined my fight scenes. Yeah. But it happens.
And it's so frustrating because it's physically exhausting. You're putting your body on the line. You know. Sometimes you're going to get an injury that you're going to carry along for the rest of your life. And they're throwing this stuff away on the cutting room floor.
And why do they hire me in the first place?
Yeah.
Because of what I can do or because of my past experience or whatever that I bring, what I personally bring to it. And then it's thrown away. But it's very hard to get... In Hong Kong, they understand it. It's understood. They're the kings of fighting. We're talking back in the 90s, 2000s, right? Nowadays, we have some great guys here, you know, Chad and David. There's great guys here now that can do some amazing stuff. So we're talking that era. Let's get that understood. We're talking about that era. America was learning. I would ask, like Joseph Mayer would ask me, what do you want to do for the next film? I would say, I want to bring Yuen Woo Ping or Sammo Hung, or any of these great guys, you know, Lau Galiong, bring them over, please, to get the best action possible. Never happened, because they don't get it. This was Rage. After I'd done Firepower and Deadly Target for PM, then they signed me to a three-picture deal, and this was the first picture on that three-picture deal. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, actually. Again, Spiro and all his stunt guys It's nice. When I was first introduced to Spiro and all his stunt guys. They're a fantastic group of guys. And PM knew where to put their money, you know? They put their money on the screen.
Yeah.
They put their money in the act. They knew what sales. Interesting story. They took me to Cannes. Second trip to Cannes, they took did Fist of the North Star. They took me to Cannes to promote Fist of the North Star. But then there was this one. And when they had a screening of this, there's one scene in this film, which is there's this crazy high fall, which Bobby Brown, a very famous stuntman, he did from a helicopter. He was doubling me and he did this. If you'd done this high fall and landed on the ground, you would have like just splattered all over the place. But, you know, my character had this like serum in it, kind of like Captain America, this serum that made him rage, gave him rage. That's where the title of Rage comes from. And this mild-mannered school teacher gets injected with this super serum and becomes crazy. So this guy did this stunt for me where he falls out of a helicopter like 150 foot to the ground, and I survived it, right? And when I first saw that at the screen, I was like, oh my God, that's so ridiculous. But in Cannes, when it was screened, when they saw me roll and get up from that fall, they just all stood up, erupted into cheers. I was like, are you kidding me? It's so stupid. You just never know what people want to see, you know? It's so funny.
Oh, it was a different time then, wasn't it? The whole Cannes experience. I mean, I met you the first time in Cannes.
Yeah.
Because we've got a mutual friend, Ross Boyask, who you've worked with now. And yes. We did our first short film together. But you would go to Cannes and get amongst it with the...
The promoters would take you to promote the films. What they wanted you to do was meet the buyers. Buyers, the distributors from all over the world, right? They come to Cannes. And they love it if they meet the actors. I don't want to say stars, but when they meet the actors. So it benefited, it behooved the production company to take the lead actor. This is what Cannes is all about.
Cannes, what I've all missed out on. I mean, it's all right for some, isn't it? Getting a nice trip to Cannes, south of France.
Hey, you have social media now to promote all your films. You get out there. Anywhere. We never had that.
We're just on Zoom now.
I never had that. But no, those Cannes trips were great. I would meet the distributors from all over, you know. And once they meet you, if they like you, they buy all your films. They'll buy all your films.
And would you make deals for future movies while you're in Cannes? Or?
No. Oh, yeah, sometimes, yes. Because you meet producers and other producers will come to you. You know, you're going through now what I went through back then. I was a commodity, okay? I was bankable. You could greenlight films on my name back then. When you're in that position, every Tom, Dick and Harry will come to you. Yeah. You attract every producer, every money man, every manager, every agent, flies to a flame, moths to a flame. Yeah. You know, the film industry is a business like any other business. This is why it's called show business, half show, half business. And basically as an actor, you are the commodity. And while your commodity is hot, everybody wants it. So, yes, when I was in Cannes doing all this promotion, I was on TV shows all over the world doing interviews and blah, blah, blah. You're doing it now. I went through it then. But you soon find, I hope you never do, that once your name or your value, your commodity starts decreasing, devaluing, all these people, so-called friends, business partners, they leave like rats from a sinking ship, right? I hope you don't have to go through that. But it's quite an experience, you know. It's yin and yang.
So what was the budget for something like Rage and how many shooting days did you have?
Budget, I could not tell you exactly because that never bothered me.
Yeah.
All I cared about was what I got on screen and how much I got paid.
Oh, yeah.
But I would imagine it would have been around 2.5 to 3 million, and we would shoot for just under a month. But with PM, we would have three units going at the same time, three separate units.
What was amazing about PM Entertainment, I think every movie they made, it had the same car crash in the LA River. They regurgitated it all the time. You can't blame them. Good business decision.
Stock footage is stay part and parcel of the industry. Yeah. Actually, I was very lucky. They called them the three R's of revenue. Rage, Riot, and Rico. We had Spiro Rosados. He was our secret weapon, man. No one knew of him back then. Joseph Mayer, who was the M in PM. We're very close friends even to today. Him and Rick Pepin, the other, the P in PM, they knew what sold. Everything was about action, action, action. Get some recognizable names, but action, action, action. And those films, and Spiro was the king. Spiro was the master of that. The stuff that he would get on screen. You know, Spiro would shoot 9,000 feet of film a day. So roughly a 90-minute film is 9,000 feet of film. Spiro, when shooting these intricate action scenes, would be shooting 9,000 feet of film a day on these scenes. So producers would freak out, because it's not like nowadays where you just shoot on an SD card. It was film. It was tangible. You had to pay for that film.
Yeah. What are you trying to do, tickle me to death? Don't turn your back on me.
You're already dead.
Fist of the North Star, which is
the fist.
You in craziest shape. And being this muscular and this flexible doesn't make sense.
Come on. You've been quicker.
Oh, wasn't this flexible though? The splits you do in the minute on this rock. It's cool.
Let me tell you something here. The whole universe is made up of energy. And thought is creative energy. What you think you can create. If you don't believe that you can be that physical and that flexible, then it won't happen for you. You're creating that negativity. Right. If you believe it, you can achieve anything in this life. What can be conceived and can be believed can be achieved, because thought is a creative energy. Word is an even more powerful creative energy. And then action.
Can I just say something though?
No.
You look like me.
I look like you?
Yeah, with the stubble and the brown hair.
I don't quite know how to take that.
But, you know, better physique and more flexible. But
look, we're different.
The mullet, the Adkins look.
I never believe in comparisons. This is not a comparison world. All of our souls are in their own journey. You are you. I am me. We're all on our own journeys, and I don't believe in the word better. We're all different. No one is better than anyone else. There's no need for comparison. You're on your journey.
Brilliant stuff though here, Gary. I'm going to interrupt you because I'm going to talk about how brilliant you are. I love this way you're moving back there. That the way that works there, moving back for that block. And then this side kick. Bang.
You have to learn to fight moving backwards. Look at Muhammad Ali. He was the greatest at it.
The man, you got amazing kicks.
Do you notice everything was shot in one direction?
No, yeah, turn off. I'm a little bit disappointed about that.
Chad Stahelski right there.
Oh, is it? Oh, wow.
I used to bring him on as many films as I could back in the day. Yeah. Because he was good. This is Dennis O'Keefe.
Yeah, I wish they had had a few more angles, to be honest.
It was time. Tony Randall, the guy who directed this movie, was a horror movie director, not an action movie director. When he got hired to do this, God, I love the guy. He's a nice guy. But he watched Bloodsport and Enter the Dragon and figured, I know how to shoot martial arts films. So...
I can see the sort of Enter the Dragon, Bruce Lee in the cave sort of influence. You're in the center of frame and it's always on you. But how long did you have to shoot all this then? How many days was this?
Days? Are you kidding me? One morning.
So you just choreographed, you knew the choreography, you got in there with the stunt guys and got it done.
No, we got in there with all this chat again. We got in there, my Sifu and I, with the guys that morning and choreographed it that morning. And shot it that morning. We had till like lunch, I think, that day to shoot this.
We've done well to remember all the choreography then, if you'd...
When my Sifu and I are a team, I know we choreograph, we move the same in a similar way. I understand his movement, so I understand the choreography. It comes naturally to me. Like when a guy from Hong Kong comes in and does the choreography, it's completely foreign to me. Like the movements are completely foreign to my body, to my movement. So it takes a little bit longer to pick it up and understand the fluidity, gain the fluidity. But the stuff we're doing here is stuff I do in training with my Sifu, like the hand techniques you see. So it's natural to me. So I can pick it up very quickly. My body just flows in that way. Yeah. And I was lucky to have a lot of very good stuff. This is Eric Paulson, very popular MMA instructor. I had great stuntmen here. They were all good martial artists themselves. Each one of those guys were great martial artists themselves. Yeah. A lot of them from Inner Sano Academy. I used to love using the guys from the Inner Sano Academy because they would always do whatever I asked with no egos.
Yeah, really sharp kicks here, mate.
But unfortunately, I didn't get to edit. Let's chat again. See, I hate the way they go in tight there.
I love this bit. Proper Bruce Lee style.
Very 1970, zoom in, right? Hong Kong, yeah, zoom in.
It works for the movie.
Fist and All Star was very hard work. I lost 10 pounds on that film, but I thoroughly enjoyed making that movie. We came so close to a theatrical release. There was one company that wanted to take it out theatrically, but they didn't offer enough money to the producers, to Robbie Little, so he didn't let them have it. Would have changed my life. Would have changed my career if that had gone theatrical.
Would you say that that's the biggest budget film that you starred in, or?
Yeah, probably.
Because it looks big budget.
Yeah, money came from Japan, Toei from Japan, the guys who own the rights to the North Star comic books and the property. Some of the buyers complained it was too violent. I actually signed to do three of those films of Fist of the North Star. Contract was for three of them. But some of the buyers complained about the violence, especially the scene where Shin, Costas Mandalore, was putting his fingers in my chin. They thought it was too violent.
Yeah, well, if you've seen the comic book, the anime, that's much worse. I love the violence. I thought it was, and these head expanding and everything. And when you kick that guy's jaw across his face.
Good for you. You remember that stuff.
Oh, yeah. And there's a brilliant kick you do at the end. There's a brilliant kick you do at the end where you do a, you know, it's like the jumping 360 kick, but you take off from the other leg. So you swing your knee up and then you open up into a 360 kick. Beautiful kick.
Thank you.
I remember seeing it and then continually trying to do it, you know.
And improving on it.
Closer and closer.
You know, my inspiration back in those days was the Hong Kong action films of the 80s, which to me was the golden era of martial arts action films. The stuff that was coming out of Hong Kong and China in the 80s, with Sammo and Yung Bu and Jackie and Tam Teo Liang and Wong Jung Lee, you know, the Drunken Masters, the Fearless Hyenas, the Super Cops, all that stuff back in the 80s and 90s, righting wrongs. That's just brutal. And that was what I was trying to emulate. I could never do some of the stuff that Yung Bu was doing was just ridiculous. But the way they shot stuff back there, that's what I was trying to emulate. Very hard to do here in America. Like when we were talking about what I could bring back from Hong Kong to America, one thing I noticed when I worked with Jackie Chan is he has a team around him at all times. They're all saying, how about this? How about that? Throwing ideas out, right? There's 5, 6, 7 guys on this team. He has his stunt team. And I watched that and I watched how they worked and I thought, this is brilliant. Jackie has the final say, but everyone's giving him ideas. So I wanted to put that team together here when I came back to America because there was great guys here like Koichi Sakamoto. I don't know if you know of Alpha Stunts and all those guys. I tried to put a team together. But here, the egos, man. Everyone wanted to be the main guy, the guy who had the say, you know, and it was like, wow, different world.
Well, essentially, that's what 8711 eventually did to create a team.
Yeah. And I totally applaud them for it. Chad had a vision. There you go. And look at the success they've had. Brilliant. I think it's fantastic.
White Tiger. I was really impressed. I remember being really impressed with this film when I watched it. Really good production value, very good story, brilliant actors, and real quality fighting. Everything about it was quality, man.
Well, thank you. I choreographed them all.
There you go. Tell us about it.
We shot it up in Vancouver. It was one of my most favorite experiences of all my films because the cast and crew were fantastic. As you mentioned, Carrie Tagawa, Julia Nixon, Matt Craven. Ron Ewan, as you see there, I brought him. He's a friend of mine from LA, good friend of mine. He was just in the Mulan film.
And, got a big directing gig coming up, hasn't he?
Yeah, and you know, we've been friends for 30 years. We met on Ring of Fire. My first ever role, which got me my SAG card. And so I brought him up to work on it. And I like the way the film turned out. You know, it's like when you're so happy, you do your best work. And that time up in Vancouver was just a great time. And like you say, we had a great cast.
I like this move here, Gary. I've never seen this before. It's cool.
You're going to copy it? You don't need to. I'm sorry. That was a joke. That was a joke. That one didn't work. I choreographed this fight. But Ron is a wonderful guy. He's a really, him and his brother, Roger, they're good guys. But yeah, I had a great time filming that. And the film did very well. And we actually were supposed to do a sequel, and I made a faux pas and it didn't happen. But
slick film.
Good times.
Bringing in the arm bars before they were popular.
Yeah, but I use it to break his neck instead of his arm.
Bringing in the arm bars. Oh no, he's broke his neck with it.
I was going for cinematic, not reality.
Dazza and Gazza. That was a winning combination. Please talk about Blood Moon. It's one of my favourites of yours.
A lot of people like that film, actually. The action was a little bit cut above what was coming out at that time in Western movies.
Hong Kong action. Are you just jumping up on that wall on your own, or are you on a wire?
I can't remember, to be honest with you. I know there was a scene where I jumped over a table where I was on a wire because you could see me moving so slowly. It was horrible, but
yeah,
I don't remember there. Honestly, I don't remember there.
He's on a wire there, isn't he?
Yeah. And I came off a mini tramp there, which threw me off on that side. I didn't like that at all.
Oh, it's brilliant stuff, though. The fights in this are great. Proper Hong Kong style.
It did really well, this film. I'm not trying to blow my own trumpet. I'm talking about the film as a whole, not me. The film as a whole did very well.
Yeah, no, it's great. And that's a nice kick there. I've not actually seen that before.
No, I'd never seen it before. And Tony, a few days before we shot this, he asked me, I want you to go practice this. I want you to do a flying psychic. But then while you're in the air, throw your other leg backwards. And so, yeah,
work on it. That's a pulled hamstring waiting to happen, Gary.
Never had one, mate. The only time I've ever had an injury.
You've never had one. Of course you haven't. I've had loads.
My only injuries have come from playing football. I play football every weekend, you know, and that's the only place I get injuries, playing football.
How was it working with good old Darren Shalavi?
Yeah, nice kid. You know, obviously he came in and he was just so super excited. He was like on a high during that whole thing. But he was a young lad. He was very young and very respectful, and I liked him a lot. We've hung out a few times. He used to come to California. We would hang out. I was back in England in 1999 when Manchester United won the treble. So I went up for the parade in Manchester and Darren came with us. And when I was up shooting Hunt to Kill, we hung out in Bang. We hung out a lot. We were friends, very good friends. And very shocking, you know, when I got the news, when I saw the news that day, it was quite shocking, actually.
Yeah.
There's the wire over the table. You can see the padding under me and it just looks so unnatural to me. I wasn't used to that. Yeah. When I jump over that table, when it swings, it's like, whoop! Yeah.
Hold your trousers up high as well.
Yeah, you have to. It's the way with the harness you're wearing. I'm sure you know about it. It's the harness.
Yeah. How many, so this end fight sequence, how many days did you shoot for?
I think that was 6 or 7 days. And down in North Carolina, in the heat and humidity of the summer, I think Darren and I both lost a lot of weight. I mean, he's wearing that heavy leather jacket, that black leather jacket.
And the mask. Yeah. Darren told me a story, actually. There's a bit where you're both in the splits, right?
Yeah, when we're supposed to be doing a Wing Chun fight. Like, we're doing some Wing Chun while we're both in the splits, and it never made the final cut.
I don't know if you did this as well, but I remember him telling me that he put deep heat on the inside of his thighs too, so he gets to stay in the splits longer. And he put a part of it on his balls.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's not a place you want to be putting deep heat.
Yeah. That made me laugh.
We've all learned that at some point in our life.
Cold Harvest, working with the main man, Isaac Florentine.
Avi Lerner, you know, and I were getting quite close. I did a few films for him, and he wanted me to do the film. So he set me up with Isaac. So I don't know if Isaac actually wanted to work with me, but got more likely got stuck with me.
That's good things to say about you, though.
What helped again on this film was I mentioned Koichi Sakamoto earlier and Alpha Stunts. Isaac loved Alpha Stunts also, so we brought in some of the Alpha guy, Yuji, and that to do the fight action on this film.
Was this Koichi or Yuji?
This was Yuji on this one, not Koichi.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because Yuji did Special Forces that I and Ninja that I didn't know. Okay.
But those guys at Alpha Stunts, they were the closest thing Hollywood had at that time to the Hong Kong action stunt team, you know? They really understood it, and they understood the... They worked so hard. I used them on a few films. Whenever I could get them, I tried to get them on Fist of the North Star. They were my first choice on Fist of the North Star. But at that time, when I showed their demo reel to Robbie Little, who's the owner of Overseas Film Group, he said, "Oh, I don't want that Hong Kong chop socky stuff," which was quite ironic because then he used them after that on Drive, you know? One thing about Isaac, he understands. At that time in Hollywood, back in the 90s, there were two directors that, to me, understood the fight genre, the martial arts fight genre. Isaac Florentine and Steve Wang. They were the two. So I was happy to work with Isaac. He'd only done one or two films. I think he'd done Savant, and he'd done that movie with Antonio Banderas, High Voltage. I think they might have been the only two. And there may be some I didn't know of, but those were the two he'd done before this. And I could see his vision.
Well, he loves the spaghetti western.
Sound effects with editing. Isaac knew his way around the action and fighting film set. And I loved his preparation. He was the first director I worked with that would come to the rehearsals with a pad and the script, and he would do a shot list. He would watch the choreography that we did, and he would literally do a shot list right there, like all of his camera angles that he was going to use and how he's going to edit it. He was very prepared, and I really respected that about him.
How was it fighting with cowboy boots on?
You learn over the years to fight in anything. You really do. You know, what are you going to do? Wear training shoes every fight scene you do? You just, you can't. You know, it would be nice if you could wear training shoes and sweatpants every fight scene you do. But
I know that you're going to go to your first costume fitting and, all right, shoes, whatever. But I bet when you're putting those trousers on, first thing you do is throw a kick.
The first thing I do is try and do a split, right? Yeah. The trousers, wardrobe don't get it a lot of the time. They just don't get it. I'm not modeling in this. I'm not walking on a ramp. I'm going to be trying to kick people in the head. So what I often try to do, if I can, is get a nice pair that fit for the dialogue scenes, the walking scenes. But then I tell them, get me another pair, two sizes too big for the fight scenes. So if it doesn't look great, I'm sorry. As long as the kicks and the action looks good, that's all that matters.
You regret it if you don't, ladies, because as soon as I throw a kick, my ass is going to just burst out of this thing.
And that happened in Fist of the North Star. Somebody took a photo of a still shot. Yeah, the leather pants. There's a still shot somewhere of the wardrobe lady with a needle and thread kneeling down at my groin, at my crotch, through the needle and thread, sewing it up because it happened. But yeah, for me now, I really try to focus on character and action. That's just as important to me. In my early days, it wasn't. It was always about the fighting and just enjoying myself. Now I live a lot more consciously, and it's more about, when I read scripts, I delve much deeper into it. How can I develop an interesting character? I want to play interesting characters now, characters that I can develop. If you look at all the most successful movie industry actors of all time, the Brad Pitts, the Tom Hankses, the Tom Cruises, all the great actors, they weren't fighters. They weren't dancers. They weren't athletes. It's about this. Yeah. It's what goes on internally and what comes out through the eyes and what goes on here. So I want to try and bring the best I can, the best vision of myself I can bring as an actor, to marry it along with the fighting and the action. You can't have great action, bad acting. Great acting, bad act. It's yin and yang. There has to be balance.
Yes, balance. I completely agree. It's very hard, though, on short schedules to...
Yes, it is.
You know, for me, it's like I want to be seen as the best actor possible.
Of course.
But also I know that I have to deliver the action because I've got a huge fan base expecting that. So it's always this internal struggle of, should I ask for another take because I know I can perform this monologue better or whatever. But if I do that, we're not going to have as much time for the fight sequence that we're already behind on and has to be shot.
So we're always behind on the fights. Like the directors, you're always here. Okay, we've got 8 hours for the fight scene. You come in the morning, you shoot all the dialogue leading up to it, and now it's lunchtime.
Yeah.
And they've got to shoot the end.
Into the fight by now.
You've got to shoot the end because you have to have bookends to the scene. But then you end up squeezing 2 hours in for the fight.
Yeah.
No, I tell you, I did a film which to me is one of my favorite films. You've probably never heard of it. It's called Spoiler.
I've heard of it.
I didn't have to fight in it. I did some fights, but they weren't martial arts. It was all about character. Yeah. And I loved that film. But the buyers didn't want to buy it because Gary Daniels wasn't kicking ass.
That's the problem.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then I had situations like I did a film called Forced to Fight in Romania. I love the script. It really delved into the depression of a fighter and a parent and who's gets beat up. And it was deep. And I really loved the character. But then I go out there and I shouldn't say that it's putting somebody down. But I ended up, even though they had the choreographers, supposedly it was all done when I got there. I got there and I looked at the choreographer and I was like, I had to redo it all, 17 fights.
Yeah.
And on a short 3 week, shoot, I had to choreograph and tell them how to help them direct 17 fights and perform them, but still focus on that character that I wanted to focus
on. You want to focus on your acting, don't you? You don't want to have to focus so much on that. But yeah, sometimes you've got to, look out for your own interests.
But like you just said, do you pick and choose or do you try to marry?
I try to go 50-50. That's become my way to do it because I understand. I mean, I'm a fan of action movies. I'm a geek with it. I love it. But I love the craft of acting too. So I just try and get the best of both worlds.
Ryan Fury. I heard rumors that there was a certain guy named Scott Atkins that was supposed to play that role.
No comment. It went to the right guy.
Oh, that was quite an experience because I had originally read for a character of Steve Fox.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't get it. It went to Luke Gossett, right?
Yeah.
And so a couple of months went, this was like November before Christmas that year. And then like in January or February, I got a call from a very good friend of mine, Mike Norris, Chuck Norris's son. He's a dear friend of mine. And his brother, Eric, was doing the action directing on it. And Mike called me and he said, look, my brother's asking if you're in good shape right now. Are you still training? I said, Mike, it's me.
Yeah, of course I'm in great shape.
No, I'm training. Meaning, I'm training. I would never.
I just finished my second 4-hour session of the day.
Mike and I joke. We work together in Israel, and we've been dear friends ever since. And so, I got the call about this Brian Fury character. So they said, "We want you to play that, but you're going to have to fly out to Louisiana and meet with Stephen Paul, the executive producer, because they're not sure if you're too old to play the part. So fly out, let him have a look at you, and he may say no, or he may say yes.
Well, the guy's got grey hair, though, so I don't quite get that.
So I flew out there just not knowing if I was going to get the part. And I was out there for 2 days, and he said, yeah, you got it. And the film that you see edited is completely different than the sequence of the film that we shot. There was no main villain in the film for John's character. And I had two fights with him, actually. One where I beat the hell out of him and I pick him up and I throw him and he's out and I'm beating him up and all this and that. And then I have another fight with him later in the film where he beats me, right? But when they were doing the editing, they realized there's no main villain in this film. So what they did is they decided, let's make Brian Fury the main villain. And so they took those two fights and edited them together as one fight.
Oh, right.
And it's just weird because, anyway, it is what it is. But it was a good sized budget. And they thought it was going to get a theatrical, but it didn't, unfortunately.
If you didn't have this Kevlar vest, your insides are going to be like mush.
Well, I do it, sir.
Well, how was that experience then, the Expendables?
It's not something you're going to turn down. When they come to you, like Chad called me and said, look, Stallone is looking for an actor who can do his own stunts but can play a character, can act also, right? So can you send me your demo reel? So I did. I sent my reel to Stallone, which has acting and action on it. And he called me and said, Sly, I would like to meet with you. So I went to meet with Sly at his office. It was like half an hour meeting in his office. And I got the job, and
it was the action movie star movie, wasn't it? So to be invited to be part of it
at that time, yeah, it was an honor to be invited, and I have Chad Stahelski to thank for that, you know, for setting that up for me, and I'll never forget that. But yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to turn it down? My role originally was basically a stunt role. I was like special forces guy number one or something, but fortunately, Mr. Stallone was very open to ideas, and there would be times at the beginning when we were doing blocking scenes, and I would say to him, Mr. Stallone, you know, if you're meeting with this guy here and I'm protecting you, there's an area here where the tree line is unprotected, and I would see my character patrolling the tree line to protect you from anything that could come from here rather than just standing by the truck. And he'd be like, you know what, that makes sense, we're going to do that, you know. And I was like, at first it was like Eric Roberts, right? Because I would tell Eric Roberts, I'd say, Eric, I don't know, it doesn't feel right to my character. And he said, go tell Sly. I was like, go tell Sly, I can't go and interrupt him, he's getting ready to direct a scene. And Eric go tell him, go. And then he would go tell Stallone, Gary's got an idea. And then he would listen and he would implement it. And after that happened, anytime they needed like ad-libbing or people killed or this and that, Sly would come to me and throw it all at me. And and when we finished shooting, you know, we did the first 5 weeks in Brazil. And at the right at the end, he came up to me on set, he put his arm around me and he goes, Gary, I love what you're doing. He said, the audience are going to hate you. You're a good bad guy. He said, I'd like to give you more to do. I'd like to build up your character, but I have to do it without adding days to the schedule. Yeah. And I said, okay, well, I do have a few ideas. I was so flat. And then all of a sudden I got a character name. I was the Brit and blah, blah, blah. And then I was informed when we finished filming, you know, about a year later before it came out, I got a call from production saying, you know, Sly has given you a front end credit of the fifth billing. I'm like, are you kidding me? I was a stunt guy originally, you know? So, you know, he was fantastic. Unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that he did give me to do didn't make the final cut, which was disappointing. But again, you know, I thank you.
That's the way it goes, isn't it, sometimes?
On with it then.
So just tell us about working with Ross Boyesque and Stu Bennett here.
I've known Ross for 20, 30 years. Probably before you even did your short, was it Pure Vengeance with him? Yeah. I've known him for a long time. And when I did a audio commentary in England for the DVD for Fist of the North Star,
yeah,
I told him, look, I want to bring some guy in who can actually represent the audience. So he can ask me questions instead of just me yapping during the audio commentary. Let's have this guy come in who's a total martial arts movie fan, geek. Yeah. Let him ask me questions during the show, just like you're doing now, actually. And he can represent the audience so they get to hear the things they want to hear. So I've known Ross. I brought him in to do that, and we've been friends ever since. Well, I'm always trying to help English people, English up-and-coming directors, writers. I've had directors come here, new guys, and introduce them to producers. And I've always tried to help English people. And I mean, sadly, I'll say you don't get a lot in return, but but you don't help somebody because you want something in return, you know? You help people because you want to help people.
Yeah.
There are instances when, you know, you put yourself out on a limb for people, but then when they do get successful, like, you're gone now because they're successful. It's like...
Strong cash in this movie, though, mate. Strong cash.
Ross is smart. He knows how to shoot it. I think he got the idea. He does really well with the sound effects, which is so important. You know, film is an audio visual experience. And a lot of people don't realize this when they edit fight scenes. They do the visuals, but they don't think of the sound. Isaac gets it. Isaac knows. When you look and they do a whip pan, now Isaac will be like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, maybe he needs to restrain himself with that sometimes.
Yeah. Some people say a little bit, but other people love it, right? But
yeah.
I think, you know, Ross is a fan of Isaac's too. So I think that's, did very well with the sound effects, right?
Yeah.
But this is not a Hong Kong big fight movie. It's not a big, it's a European, British, two guys fighting. It can't be all the Wing Chun, flashy wushu kind of stuff, you know? It had to be a hardcore fight. Yeah. It had to be kind of hard. Yeah, you know, two military guys fighting each other. And, Yeah, it turned out, actually, I'll be honest, it turned out better than I thought, that the fights. It did turn out better than I thought.
Stu Bennett as well. I did a film with him. He's a lovely chap.
He is. Very nice guy. I liked him. Nice guy.
Well, Gary Daniels, it's been a career spanning quite a few years, and you're still going. What's your secret? Training twice a day.
You know what? Diet. Diet is a key. Stay away from alcohol. Stay away from drugs. Stay away from fried food. All the obvious stuff, right? All the simplified sugars, processed food. Try to stay away from negative emotions. Stay away from anger. Stay away from rage. Stay away from hate. Stay away from jealousy. These negative emotions will affect you just as much as the bad stuff you put in your body, the smoking and all that kind of stuff. Try to stay away from that. Try to control your thoughts. Learn to think about your thoughts. When you feel it going negative and bad, think about it and change it. Live a positive lifestyle and believe. Don't think just because, oh, now I'm 50 this, I'm 50 that, I have to get old and give up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Age, when it comes to the soul, has nothing to do with years. It's about awareness, levels of awareness. So don't give in to age. What is that saying? You don't give up and stop training because you get old. You get old because you give up and stop training.
Yes.
So keep doing what you love doing. Just keep doing it. Life is a process of creation and recreation. It's an ongoing process. Don't quit. Winners never quit. Quitters never win.
Yeah. But just keep going. Make sure you quit that fried chicken.
Are you a fried chicken guy? You just gave a secret to the world, Scott Atkins.
No, my problem is the sugar. My problem is sugar. But no, you've stayed in amazing shape. You've done amazing action movies throughout your career. You're one of the martial arts movie icons. Gary Daniels flying the flag for the UK. Well done, mate. Thanks so much for coming on The Art of Action. It's been absolutely.
I appreciate you inviting me. I hope we didn't talk too much and the fans get something out of it.
They're going to love it, as did I. And I do hope that we'd get the chance to work together.
The ball's in your court, my man.
We'll make it happen, mate. No, I'm sure we'll make it happen.
All right, mate. All right. Appreciate it.
Thanks, mate.